A warm welcome to our Thursdays with David Foster Wallace series, where we every week read a section of the infamous Infinite Jest with the hope, of course, of finishing the book by the end of the year. Today's episode, as you have already gathered from the title, is a bit different, however, because we will instead be talking about DFW's critical reception, specifically in regards to Infinite Jest. Hello and herzlich willkommen zu unserem Podcast. Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. It has been a difficult week. Persönlich kann ich sagen, dass ich nicht in München im Herbst studieren darf. Die E-Mail, die mich darüber informiert hat, war so schrecklich zu lesen, muss ich sagen. Aber Leben ist lang und 5 Monate sind nicht Schlimmes, ja? On a broader and more important scale, however, I have thought long and hard for the entire week about how I might talk about current events on the show today. I've reached a few conclusions. First, the thing about being so intimate with language is that sometimes people expect you to have the right things to say, especially when the situation motivates people to be divisive and to claim sides for themselves and for others. But second, contrary to that, is an irrefutable truth that there is nothing I can say that would satisfy everyone, least of all myself. So all I will say as the person behind this disembodied voice that you all hear is that I care about you, I'm praying for you, and that I am here for you. Tangibly, what matters is my commitment of time to you if you comment or reach out to the show, and our commitment of consistency for each and every episode. So if you need a distraction or something else current to listen to besides the news, you have it. Today's episode is the long-awaited critical reception overview of Infinite Jest, and we'll be taking not only time to talk about Infinite Jest today, but about DFW and writing and postmodernism and some of these really important, pertinent themes that have come up again and again in our review of Infinite Jest on the channel and in the comments. Like many of these kinds of investigative episodes, I've linked some similar ones down below. For this episode, I started with an article from The New Yorker. In the article, which was written by DT Max, who wrote a biography on DFW and is linked in the description down below, Max describes a literary interview that DFW took in 1993 when, quote, Wallace was in the midst of writing Infinite Jest, end quote, and one can evidently tell that some of the same themes run in the interview as in the novel as a whole. It's worth noting, by the way, that this article, as many of the first articles that will come up under a preliminary Google search, was written in anticipation of the novel's 20th anniversary edition and indeed have some significant plot spoilers. Interestingly, another piece of Wallace's, an essay called E Univis Plurum, Television and U.S. Fiction, was published alongside the written interview from 1993, which, and I'm going to quote here from the New Yorker article, quote, called for a generation of writers who would be unafraid to embrace sentimentality, and this next bit is from Wallace himself, quote, endorse and instantiate single entendre principles, unquote. I find that statement to be so profound because there's a tendency, especially in academia and in literature in general, to be as convoluted and as symbolic and as referential and as tangential as possible. And the observation here from DFW is that one now needs bravery to approach profundity in less complex but equally as meaningful ways. We're straying from the topic at hand here, however, as Max does for a time in the beginning of his article. When he does start commenting on critical review, he says, quote, critics were split between enthusiasm and doubt, often in the same review. Nearly all, though, praised its prodigious energy, unquote, and certainly that energy and inventiveness and creativity is something that persists in the feeling of reading the book even today, some 24 years after its initial publication in February of 1996. Max really focuses on the role of readers in promoting the revolutionary qualities of this novel, and he claims that these readers came in two waves. The first wave were those who marveled at the lexical innovations of the novel, and the second wave comprised those who were essentially devotees of the narrative. So, in some ways, it was a cultural revolution that brought about the novel's lasting critical response. Something else of note here, and this is a huge aside, a huge tangent we're going on, by the way, is that while Wallace is still known for some of his speeches and other essays, really his only widely well-known work of fiction is Infinite Jest itself. So think about how odd that is for a second here. For example, Don DeLillo and his powerhouse novel Underworld are very well known, but he's also well known for books like White Noise and Mao the Second. Murakami has won Q84 and arguably his newest novel, Killing Commendatore, which both fit in the same category as Underworld, but Murakami is still widely known for Norwegian Wood and The Elephant Vanishes. DFW though? I, at least, and some of the authors in the description down below seem to agree with me, come up with speeches, This Is Water, or Consider the Lobster, not brief interviews with hideous men or his posthumous novel, The Pale King. Max from our New Yorker article attributes this quality to the comparatively small splashes that Wallace's other three novels made after Infinite Jest was published, citing the important aspect, quote, of a sustained audience and critical response, unquote. Moving on to Larry McCaffrey's interview of DFW from the Review of Contemporary Fiction, Summer 1993, Volume 13.2, as always quoted and cited down below. There are a ton of gems in this interview, especially since it's a literary interview, meaning that it was created to be written out, not recorded with spoken voices. Therefore, you can tell that both DFW and LM put their best feet forward to create a miraculous literary experience within the interview itself. I want to focus particularly on DFW's discussion of postmodernism in the interview, as postmodernism plays a lot into Infinite Jest, whether you are on the side of people who think that IJ was somewhat of a love letter to postmodernism, or indeed on the side of people who think that Infinite Jest is a kind of post-postmodernism in itself. If you're curious about post-postmodernism, by the way, there's a fascinating read about it called Post-Postmodernism or the Cultural Logic of Just-in-Time Capitalism by an academic called Nealon, who describes the phenomenon by saying, quote, far from charting any simple move beyond postmodernism since the 1980s, though, this book, i.e. post-postmodernism, argues that we've experienced an intensification of postmodern capitalism over the past decades, an increasing saturation of the economic sphere into formerly independent segments of everyday cultural life, unquote. Now, back to DFW's thought about postmodernism in the interview, which actually seems similar to the description of post-postmodernism that I just read. DFW starts out by comparing the original postmodern writers from the 50s and 60s to the postmodern writers of the 90s, and he says that one distinct difference between the two groups is the latter group's affinity for highly cultural elements, as in DFW's case, he uses so-called gags that have no other intended purpose in his writing than to be funny. This trope alludes to the television culture that writers like DFW grew up with and were highly influenced by. Secondly, postmodern writers, also writers in other groups who proved highly influential to writers in DFW's generation, systematically and sensationally broke conventional rules of writing, but as DFW himself points out, quote, the rule-breaking has got to be for the sake of something, unquote. It cannot, quote, become an end in itself, unquote. Later in the interview, DFW exemplifies this point by using the work of a writer he admires, Bill Volman, saying, quote, what's precious about somebody like Bill Volman is that even though there's a great deal of formal innovation in his fictions, it rarely seems to exist for just its own sake. It's almost always deployed to make some point, end quote. Then LM and DFW start talking about metafiction, which is an idea defined in the OED as, quote, fiction in which the author self-consciously alludes to the artificiality or literariness of a work by parodying or departing from novelistic conventions, especially naturalism, and narrative techniques, unquote. Metafiction, explored by authors such as Nabokov and Coover, is also often related to postmodernism because of the way that it breaks conventions. L.M. makes a good point in that metafictionists are often, quote, criticized too much for being only interested in narcissistic, self-reflexive games, whereas their devices had very real political and historical applications, quote. DFW uses this point in a really unprecedented way in the interview, in that he turns it on its head to comment on the duplicity of art and how dangerous it is just to copy a movement, even if it's avant-garde and interesting in itself. The interview goes on and on similarly to how I've just described it, and it's a real treat if you love discussing literature as I do. The last article we will look at in depth in the episode today is an article from the 1996 edition of The Atlantic called The Alchemist's Retort by Sven Burkitz, and out of all of the articles that we've looked at today, this one really gets at the root of what we were looking for, which was an example of Infinite Jest's critical reception from the time when it was published. Burkitz starts his review by recounting some of the rumors behind Infinite Jest's publication, especially targeting fears about the book's target audience, which was doubted to, quote, read at all, unquote. Then Burkitz attempts to answer two essential questions for the novel, I think even more essential to new readers and a new world to this novel, namely, one, where does Infinite Jest come from, and two, what is Infinite Jest? To the first question, the article offers a lot of interesting information about DFW's pseudo-career as a star junior tennis player, as well as his experience in halfway houses as he was struggling with addiction, and notably an, quote, intensely rivalrous friendship with one Gil Antoitois, the son of a professor of Quebecois history, unquote. Antoitois is Lucien's last name, the brothers, get it? Really, really interesting stuff. The rest of the review reads very well, it's largely positive, and if anything, the review might attempt to simplify the narrative too much in an attempt to solve the second question, what is Infinite Jest? A lot of Burkitz's quotes are blurbable, like, quote, Wallace's writing is edgy, accurate, and darkly witty, unquote, and overall I found the piece to be true in a lot of its general characterizations of the book, so it's something that I look forward to reading again after I finish the novel. But what do you all think of this review? Is it too one-sided, too careful even? Let me know in the comments down below about what you all think. Maybe you read this review in 1996 when it came out, or others similar to it. I'd love to know what you guys' perspectives on it are. Other articles that I read, such as an article from The Guardian by Emily Moss, write about the experience of reading and finishing the novel as a way to provide some critique or insight into the work because, as Moss notes, quote, the novel requires monumental focus to even loosely follow, unquote, which is something that I've absolutely experienced so far in my numerous attempts to successfully complete the novel. But nevertheless, I found it quite useful to walk back the cat today and talk about some of the critical reception and themes behind Infinite Jest. As always, if you have a comment or question, follow the link down below. I wish you all well, let me know how you're doing, and thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the discussion and would like to hear more from us, there is a show and a series for everyone, so I'd recommend checking out our website, relevanceofliterature.com, under the ongoing series tab for links to our entire back catalog of episodes. We also have a couple of open surveys that you can find through the links in the description, so if you have 3 minutes while you're waiting in line somewhere, we would very much appreciate your feedback on our show. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode, and we'll see you next time.